And good afternoon. It is Intuitive Soul Radio with your host, Lori Houston, and we have Travelers, Seekers, and Wandering Ways today, and my co-host, Tim White. I was going to wait for you to do that, but go ahead.
Hi, Laurie.
Hi, Tim. And we have a guest in studio, so this is always exciting.
Yay.
And it's Terry Siegel?
Yes.
Awesome. So, Tim, go ahead.
Well, let's see. Terry is an expressive arts therapist. I love that. But I'll tell you about when I first met Terry, and that was we're thinking at least 4 years ago, mm-hmm. if not five. And I actually did a group drumming course with Terry, and it was absolutely fabulous. I enjoyed it immensely. It was great. And it took me about 3 years, but I do finally have my own drum now.
Great.
So Terry and then over time, I guess it was just July.
I think June.
June. Mm-hmm. We reconnected again at Buddha Groove, mm-hmm. Social Salon. So a shout out to Helen Goldstein, who's been on the show previously as well. So thanks for being here today, Terry.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
A pleasure. So let's start and just tell us a little bit about what you do.
I basically offer drumming and expressive arts programs for the purpose of team building, wellness, recreation, education. And I offer these programs to all populations, from preschool children to youth to adults and seniors in long-term mm-hmm. care. So the whole spectrum, I'll work with basically anyone and everyone.
Okay. So when we talk about expressive arts, my experience with you is with drumming, and you're a lead facilitator for a drumming group as well. So Rhythmic by Nature is your company, and I've seen you perform with your group many times, so that's something else. So drumming is kind of where I know you from. Yeah. How does that fit into expressive arts therapy?
Mm-hmm. The expressive arts therapy is my training. It's my background. But I started my company Rhythmic by Nature before I started my training as an expressive arts therapist. So everything that I do in my company is informed by my expressive arts therapy training. So although it's drumming and percussion workshops at the mm-hmm. at the center, it's informed by the expressive arts approach. And drumming is really, by nature, expressive arts, in that it's intermodal by nature, where there's the drum, there's the dancing and the singing and the colors and the storytelling. So in its nature, drumming is interdisciplinary, and it just all weaves together really nicely.
Mm-hmm. So tell us a little bit about expressive arts therapy and what kind of training you did and how that kind of moves things forward.
Yeah, I trained at ISIS Canada, which stands for the International School for Interdisciplinary Studies, and they have lots of different schools worldwide. Their kind of headquarters is in Switzerland, part of the European Graduate School, and ISIS Canada and ISIS Toronto has been going on, I think, for about 15 years, so they're very well established, and it's a growing field. So it's a 3-year part-time training program, and I graduated 3 years ago in May, I believe.
When we're doing things we enjoy, oftentimes time has no meaning.
Oh, man, it just goes so fast. Yeah, it just blends in. And I decided to go into expressive arts therapy because I was ready to learn a little bit more about what I was doing naturally, because before expressive arts therapy, I was already facilitating these group drumming / expressive arts workshops where I was combining drumming with visual art and drumming with movement and drumming with poetry and storytelling. And it was kind of, for me, a choice between, I knew I wanted to study more and get more of a foundation in kind of basic facilitation skills and how to hold space for the creative process. Mm-hmm. So expressive arts kind of answered it all, this 3-year part-time training program at ISIS.
What kind of, was there a trigger that brought you forward into expressive arts therapy besides things that you were doing intuitively on your own? Was there something in your life that kind of helped you move in that direction?
I had, my mom being a painter, had some artist friends, and one of them, one or two of them, had done their training at ISIS in expressive arts therapy. So I kind of knew about it as I was developing my business and doing more mixed arts workshops. So it was, I was kind of on that direction. And then I spent a summer at a summer camp called Camp TOEI for youth and children with learning disabilities. Mm-hmm. And my supervisor there was a graduate of expressive arts therapy. And we had all summer to talk about it, and I could pick her brain. And it was, I was at the crossroads kind of, do I go into expressive arts therapy training or arts education? And I was like, had both applications. And I basically applied for expressive arts therapy at ISIS that summer, got the interview in August, and started that September. So it was really fast.
Fast, yeah. Mm-hmm. So basically it was laid out in front of you.
It was basically, yeah. Yeah, and I kind of just knew in my heart that that was the right path, even though it wasn't so cut and dry, not knowing at the end if I would be able to get a job in expressive arts therapy, mm-hmm. whereas teaching is much more, you know, but not really, you know.
No, not really
yeah,
at all.
Yeah.
You know, I have friends of mine who are teachers and who've done teacher training who are doing, you know, are having a hard time finding a permanent job in mm-hmm. teaching. But are doing what you're doing, creating their own businesses, being very entrepreneurial.
Yes.
And creating their own businesses. So that must be really exciting for you because you already had your business mm-hmm. at one point and then you developed on that. So how did you find that process, that growth period?
It was quite natural. I found that being in expressive arts therapy with such a positive, encouraging, supportive community gave me more confidence to take my programs out there and to keep on building it. Mm-hmm. When I first started my training program, I was working part-time as a personal support worker for a woman with disabilities. Okay. And so I had kind of 3 day a week, kind of pay the bills, and really great learning in that environment as in a group home setting. And in there, and I was, you know, was trying to figure out, I didn't really know if I was going to commit to Rhythmic by Nature and this is my business, because I'm almost an accidental businesswoman. I had no idea 10 15 years ago that I'd be, you know, running my own business and making it happen.
So what were you doing 15 years ago then?
She's probably still in high school.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Elementary school. No, I'm kidding.
All right, then. Okay.
Do I look that young?
Yes, you're very young. Yeah. My apologies.
I was still in diapers. No,
I'm kidding. Good, I'm glad it wasn't that bad.
hold on, let me get my foot out of my mouth. Yeah. Sorry.
Well, I was, but you know what? The drumming for me started in high school.
Right, okay.
It started in my last year of high school. I've always been into the arts, always, you know, mm-hmm. been encouraged to express myself, and through the artistic process, studied piano and guitar, mm-hmm. and then the drums kind of just called me in probably my last year of high school, and then flourished in university at McMaster.
So when you say it called to you, how were you introduced to it? What was that? Can you remember that initial time that you started on the drum?
I think it was in the form of a community drum circle. I think my memory I have is in Montreal at the Mont Royal, mm-hmm. the every Sunday the gathering at the hill, the
okay.
mountain,
yeah.
and. I was there visiting my brother, he was studying there, and some friends, and they said, oh, you've got to come check out this Tam Tam. Mm-hmm. So I went, and yeah, that was it for me. It was like, whoa, this is the coolest thing ever. I didn't have any access to it mm-hmm. Where I grew up, or, you know, there wasn't much that I knew about in mm-hmm. my field.
Okay. Do you find that it's kind of a very primal goddess type rhythm when you drum?
Yeah, I do. Especially, for example, the initial calling was just that very primal, like, whoa, this is the heartbeat of community. Everybody's coming together. They're contributing, playing their own in their own unique way, yet we're all united in this common pulse. And I felt really liberated, and it had this real, like, freedom of expression while being together. And I, now looking back, I have a whole different lens when I'm looking at community drum circles. And it's really important for me to go back to that beginner's mind, because where I'm at now is in quite a different place, although I still really enjoy community drum circle and still offer them monthly, mm-hmm. in that spirit of just that first kind of calling. That I want other people to experience.
Because I know the session that I took with you, one of the first things that we learned was the heartbeat.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know,
do you remember it?
Oh, yeah. The right.
Oh, yeah.
Right, dun, 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 dun. Absolutely. I can't forget that. Dun, 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 dun. And that's what, and it was really interesting because you learned that heartbeat. So it becomes, because that pulse, that rhythm, and when you say it's in the community, in the drum circle, but that pulse and that rhythm is something that we create every day just with every step that we take.
Yeah.
We have that rhythm even in just the way we walk, and oftentimes we can coordinate it with our heartbeat as well, so it becomes this collective, like the community drum circle, which is really beautiful because you get to express that externally rather than something that's internal. So we look at that, and you say it expanded more when you went into university. How did you find that experience, and how did you travel that road to becoming a drum instructor?
Yeah, good question. I remember in Frosh Week at university at McMaster, there was orientation. You can go and see what all the different clubs were. And there was this table with drums and this drumming instructor promoting his classes. And I was like, I've never taken any instruction. I've just kind of jammed. And yeah, I want to learn. Because when my first access point to the drum, being in the community drum circle, there's not really much of an educational component. It's more just like, come and drum. Everybody can drum. Hit the drum. You can do it. But looking at it as a traditional art form coming from West Africa, specifically the djembe, that, you know, every other person has a djembe pretty much. And whether they know it's a djembe or they think it's a bongo we don't know what we don't know until we know. So I started learning a little bit more about the origins of this specific type of drum, and still keeping my excitement about community drum circle, but really a little bit more interested in learning the art form of drumming, and specifically in West African and different genres of drumming, different cultures of the drum.
So can you explain to us a little bit, just maybe a few of the differences in those cultures? You talk about a djembe and the different drums and the cultures. What kind of differentiates some of those cultures?
Mm-hmm. Well, the commonality is that every culture and every ethnic group within that culture has a drum and a specific way of playing with it and a specific style of drumming and music, and that's universal, mm-hmm. from First Nations people and Aboriginal people all over the world. The drum is central role in gathering in community, in ritual, in celebration, and rites of passage, and it's not separate from life. It's in life.
Mm-hmm.
It's part of it. The fabric of, keeps the fabric of the society together, really. Mm-hmm. So the differences are unique to each particular
culture
and place, okay. Right? Mm-hmm. Yet there is a commonality because before, for example, in West Africa, before there were borders in each country, there was the West African ethnic group of, or the West African people of the which is now Guinea and Mali and Senegal and Burkina Faso, the Malenke, the Manding people. Mm-hmm. And when it was kind of the borders came in, that separated each region a little bit more, and each of the countries, you know, got a little bit more change. Their music changed
and isolated. So through that isolation, mm-hmm. you have the creation within the segregation or the separation of a unit, mm-hmm. the development, much like a colloquial language in any part of the world, and how we speak, or an accent,
even, exactly,
you know, the various accents mm-hmm. that we have across the country. So in those accents, do you find there's a big difference in the style of the drumming in your experience?
Yeah, like my experience and my learning has been with teachers from West African origins. So, for example, Guinea and Burkina Faso, primarily. The ensemble of drums is the same. The djembe being the accompaniment instrument, mm-hmm. and then the large bass drums, the dununs, being the actual the bass and the foundation for the melody. What makes a rhythm? A rhythm is dependent on the interplay between the big drum, the dununba, the mm-hmm. middle drum, the sangban, and the baby drum, the kankani. And then I think what North American drum circle culture needs to know a little bit more is that the djembe, being the drum of friendship, everybody has one, is actually the accompaniment instrument in this large West African ensemble. And that's something that people may be astounded by when they just want to play their djembe, and then it's like, well, check out these drums and a little bit more. So I find that my kind of purpose has grown to be bridging the community drum circle, which is just, I just want to play a drum. Right. It's my heartbeat. It's primal. Mm. It's community, to the West African, where it's actually coming from, and finding a meeting place mm-hmm. and providing an entry point so that somebody can come to a community drum circle, have access to the drum, and then be like, whoa, I want to learn more about this. This is interesting.
Right.
And then they can come to, you know, further classes, and I can, you know, there's lots of wonderful teachers in Toronto right now teaching music mm-hmm. from Guinea and that area of the world.
And the African drum is an open, it has one open end and one closed end, yes?
Some of them, the djembe does. Yeah. It has, it's like goblet.
Right.
Goblet.
Yeah. The one most people know.
Exactly. Yes. Yeah. The djembe. Djembe, which is the drum that most people have. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then the dununs are the closed. There's a skin on each side and it's played with a stick.
Oh.
Yeah.
I have two Indian drums.
Do you?
Yeah. And they're both closed.
Uh-huh. Yeah. The tabla?
They're not tablas.
No.
No. One is supposed to be like a... neither one of them are actually what I was supposed to get, but I liked the ones that I got, so it's supposed to be like a merdingham, but neither one of them are exactly a merdingham, so
yeah
but they're not tablas either, but yeah, they're cute. One it sits nicely in your lap, and mm-hmm. the other one sits bigger in your lap, but you do your hands versus.
Yeah, that's such an intricate technique.
Yeah, they are.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah, they take lessons.
Do you take lessons?
Well, I did a little bit, but it was fun for the time.
Yeah.
And mine sits at home as more of a an artifact or
well, a piece of furniture at the moment. Really, yeah, you wouldn't know that there are two drums in my house right now because they're both covered and yeah.
I keep thinking it's there at the end and I keep going, I have music, I can beat with that. I should probably do it. It must be really good. It's probably great stress therapy.
Yeah, it's pretty good stress release. It's a full mental, emotional, spiritual exercise.
Oh, that's incredible. So now we're talking about kind of the different cultures. So part of what your education and your experiences is, it's also to inform about the traditional culture that is involved and how we can integrate that into our own experience here in North America. Is that kind of...
Yeah, definitely.
And that's quite beautiful, because even though something at you know, we start something and it's there and we get really excited. I think it's great to pull that tradition in to understand the tradition anyway, so that you are fully informed and can move forward to express it on other levels.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're doing this, do you find in your performance or in your teaching the expression on different levels for yourself as an individual, as a performer?
For myself?
Yeah.
Sorry, can you ask that again? I think so, I get what you're asking me.
Do you feel it on different levels? So mm-hmm. at one time it might be you could be performing and it's very connected to the audience, or at another time it might be something that's even above the audience and creating that oneness that you talk about in a drum circle. And the different feelings that you might have as an individual on where that sound comes from and how that performance shines through you. Does that make no? All right, okay.
Let's just edit this part.
I was just wondering if there's different levels of how it's played. Different levels
for
of
you,
how
it's, as for you me. Experience
as you experience
as you
it.
Experience the drum, do you find that you go to different levels when you're going through it?
Yes. That's my answer.
Yeah, that would be the answer.
A little bit of a delayed response.
That was called Tim's run on mouth and how to confuse really easily.
But yeah, there definitely are different levels. Like, for example, if I'm facilitating a workshop, as a facilitator, I may not go into my own personal
space
drum journey. It's as much as if I were participating in a mm-hmm. workshop. Yet, when the group comes together and we're entrained and we're together, even as a facilitator, it's amazing. Okay. Yeah.
Excellent. That's perfect. Excellent. Somebody made sense of what I was trying to say. So, hey, I'm happy. So now we take that. So what kind of experiences, if you can share that, what kind of experiences have you seen when you're facilitating with the participants? Those kinds mm-hmm. of experiences?
Lots of shifts from, let's say, it's working, for example, I've been working at Toronto Rehab mm-hmm. in with individuals who have suffered from stroke or accident, you know, can be young or older people and are limited in mobility or developmental, you know, brain injury, and shift from not any movement or not any signal of being connected to suddenly expressiveness on the drum, if they're, say, nonverbal, to literally hitting the drum and having a tangible sound that is their voice, and smiles and sparkle in the eye, their eyes. People in that, for example, group I'm talking about, there was one individual who was verbal but completely paralyzed, except for he could move his arms, but mm-hmm. he was otherwise pretty paralyzed.
Mm-hmm.
And I said to him, "Are you looking forward to drumming?" And he said, "Yeah, but I've never drummed before. I don't think I can do it." And he actually played a set of claves, a 2-6, the whole time.
Nice.
And he kind of had this really fast tick-tock, tick-tock, tick-tock rhythm that he kept pretty much throughout. And at the end, I went to collect them from him. And I said, "Did you enjoy that?" And he said, "I'm so proud of myself." So it's like those small little successes that are so empowering for people who may not be able to have any, you know, accomplish anything much on their own anymore. And it's really beautiful to see that. And another woman who also couldn't move anything except her head. It was time to give out instruments, and I went up to her and I said, "Would you like a shaker?" And she said, "I can't move anything except my head." So I encouraged her to nod. I said, "Well, when you're enjoying the music, just kind of move your head to the rhythm." And so she did that, and she actually started a song. So that was her way of contributing.
Brilliant.
So those kinds of shifts are and engagements are mm-hmm. indicators of, you know, positive.
You know, I was really worried that this was going to, yeah, well, we put a drum up close to her head and she just kept banging it with her head.
That thinking, could have been one
oh,
way.
I know, that would be, that's a nice story, but, you know, it's kind of not appropriate or something.
I wouldn't be surprised if that did happen at some point. Yeah.
Cool. Yeah, I'm really taking headbanging to a new height.
With drumming, yes.
And drumming.
But I imagine, though, that you would also get some pretty profound emotional, mental, and spiritual breakthroughs for people.
For sure. Whether that's at Toronto Rehab or working with, you know, my adult intermediate drum class or my adult beginner drum class. I do some work also at social service agencies for different types of social service agencies in mental health and, you know, breakthroughs and releases and feelings of accomplishment and allowing what can't be articulated in words to be articulated on the drum. Mm-hmm. And then after, you know, some harvesting and debriefing of, you know, expanded resources and tapping into their resources. And especially with like a 6-week program or an 8-week program, the participants can really bring the metaphors of drumming into their day-to-day life and see that everything is rhythm and we can be mm-hmm. in rhythm and out of rhythm. And then how do we, when we acknowledge that we're out of rhythm, how do we get back to our rhythm? And that is really exemplified in some of the drumming activities we do, in learning rhythmic patterns, in ensemble work, in, you know, expressive improvisations.
Mm-hmm. It's phenomenal. The story you just told about the woman, I find really quite interesting. Well, sorry. Everybody's laughing at me. It's interesting because here was a person who wasn't able to move, who wasn't able to create a rhythm with movement of any body part except with her head in nodding. But you said she started to vocalize. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden you have this wonderful connection between the drumming and that physical aspect and the expressive art therapy.
Yes.
Which is really quite interesting how it naturally ties mm-hmm. together.
With the singing and the voice, yeah.
So I'm really interested on how you incorporate, because I'm thinking that you probably use drum as kind of the basis and then everything else kind of comes around that. Am I getting that?
Yeah,
right?
Like the drumming will lead to the movement, although, you know, clapping and stomping and dance is rhythmic. Mm-hmm. So a great way of warming up a group, depending on who I'm working with, is, especially with kids, before we even touch the drums, we're going to use some shakers and we're going to and do some movement, stomping, tapping, patting knees, patting shoulders, internalizing the beat. So it's very much movement. All my drumming programs for kids, mm-hmm. and in general, it's movement based. So it starts with the body, from the heartbeat, from clapping, and then the voice as well. Mm-hmm. Because if you can say it, you can play it. That comes from that's a phrase that is popularized by Babatunde Olatunji, who was from Nigeria, and in the 1950s he came to the States, and he was a big advocate for preserving drumming from his culture, the Yoruba people in Nigeria. And he was one of the biggest influences in African drumming in North America, as well as, you know, specifically drum circle culture. Mm-hmm. And amazing artist, an amazing mentor. And so he kind of popularized, if you can say it, you can play it, because the rhythm of the words can be translated into the rhythm of the music. And that scene specifically, you can see it in East Indian drumming with the vocables that are said with the voice and then translated into each finger tap on the drum. And then if you look at any master drummer, or whether it's a master drummer who grew up in the tradition and is now teaching, or somebody who really is well-versed in the rhythm, they'll be speaking and mouthing the words as they play it. And everything can be said in mnemonics, whether it's kaka, kokoka, kaka, kokoka, or pa, ti pa, pa, ti pa, or let's all play, 1, 2, 1, 2, 3, whatever it is, right? Because if we go back to the traditional context of, say, West African drumming, it's communication, and it's each note, each rhythmic pattern was a phrase in the language. So, you know, so when in the slave trade, when everybody was shipped off to the different islands, all the different West African groups got mixed together on the different islands, and they could no longer communicate with their fellow villagers in their language on their drum. Although the drum was a big role in you know, communication, although it was completely banned and was taken away and stripped from them, right? So there you get the kind of the
slavery term. That's what happens.
Yeah, isn't it great? Yeah.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. Rip your. Well, I understand that, but it's still mind-boggling.
It is.
You know, it's mind-boggling that something that's so part of one's culture can be ripped out of one's hands.
Yeah.
They did that to women for like thousands of years.
Yeah. Well, I don't think it's really quite over. I think it's a doctored spin, you know, the media spin that capitalism is good, you know. It's still slavery itself, but you know, we're taking that away because it was, what I'm getting is that it was part of their language, how they communicate.
Mm-hmm. Part of life. Yes.
And because it wasn't separated or segmentated or from things, so wow.
But way to control and manipulate people. I mean, that's the whole, right?
Yes. Yeah. And what we're talking about here with the drumming and the expressive arts therapy is the freedom to express, mm-hmm. rather than that suppression.
Mm-hmm.
So how, with your experience and your study of this, how did they bring that back in?
In the different,
yeah,
yeah, it's interesting.
Did Western Caribbean, did they ever bring back some of that? I mean,
oh
we
yeah,
all connect in with the earth. I mean, yeah, it's just a natural part yeah. of our.
Well, in all of the islands, the Caribbean islands, mm-hmm. Haiti, and Dominican, and Jamaica, and there's the undercurrents of the African spirituality, mm-hmm. and the hybrid identity that came out of the mix, right? So you get, for example, Haitian voodoo drumming and the voodoo religion, which is that hybrid, that mix of the West African, mm-hmm. of the African, and the native people that were there, because there were people there,
right?
Right, on these islands, the native people of that island, of that mm-hmm. region. And I don't know. I mean, I love this topic. I'm so fascinated by it. I mean, wish I could study ethnomusicology or something and mm-hmm. be a real expert on it. But just from my readings, you know, I feel it's my responsibility, and I'm passionate about reading. Mm-hmm. You know, up on the history and yeah, exactly. the evolution yes, yeah. of African music in you know, North America and the Caribbean and diaspora, and how it changes. It's mm-hmm. really interesting, and influences as well as the culture, the Yoruba culture that where Baba Tunde was from. He came from a small fishing village in Nigeria. So the Yoruba people are kind of like the Aboriginal people in Nigeria, the people. It's a whole kind of religion and way of life and philosophy. And when the Yoruba people were taken to the islands, and no, specifically to Cuba, that's where Santeria was born, which is because what they found was when they came over, the slaves came over to, say, Cuba, and I hope I'm getting this history right, but, or whatever. It's just the little bits that I got.
Check up on you.
Okay, yeah, yeah. Don't quote me on this bibliography or whatever. they found that with Christianity, mm-hmm. that there are a lot of saints mm-hmm. in Christianity, and because the Yoruba culture has these deities, the Orishas, they could easily kind of fit in okay. behind yeah. the mask yeah. of Christianity right. and yes. and yeah. have a, and practice. So there were schools of, and it became Santeria, saint. Mm. So it's really interesting, right? Mm. Okay. So it's a whole drumming and prayer mm. and, again, a whole culture.
Because it becomes very meditative. Because when you are drumming, it becomes very meditative. because you create this constant rhythm that keeps going. So it becomes very meditative, which is spiritual, which is really quite interesting. So we get that tie between the physical, the mental, with the actual thought of creating a rhythm, and then the rhythm itself and tying those together in the energy of it. Phenomenal.
Yeah, in Native Canadian, Native American, the drum is the connection between the earth and the sky and the heaven, and it takes the prayer. It's through prayer and through the drum beat and the smoke of the tobacco and the sage that it goes up, right, to Creator. And the beats are very much, you know, repetitive and in a certain frequency to evoke different emotions and states of being, and to take us from our, where do we operate from, beta into the alpha, into the delta.
Right.
The different...
different brainwaves.
Yeah, okay. Different brainwaves.
And yes, beta is the everyday.
The everyday.
The everyday, yes. Anyway, so I'm wondering, and we talk a lot about drumming, and we've talked about how there's often a spontaneous expression, arts expression. So you talked about visual art, poetry, and storytelling. So how would that kind of open up? How would you bring that into a therapy session or a group session, or however it works in that way?
Yeah, good question. The other arts. I think it's very particular to who I'm working with. Mm-hmm. I'll draw on my ability to bring in other modalities depending on who I'm working with. For example, and the role of imagination and play in my approach is really central. For example, when working, again, with children, the imagination that the kids have, the drum, and if I'm working with little ones, like 2 to 4, they'll straddle the djembe. They'll straddle the little drum. Nice. So they're sitting on it. So the drum is now a horse. And we go on a whole journey through the Winter Wonderland, or we go on a toboggan ride. Mm-hmm. So a lot of imagination. And I really also encourage shared leadership. So we may have a theme of spring, and there's a little spring flower that is a seed growing into a flower. And so one person may come in the middle and crouch down to represent the seed. And then when they're crouched down low, everybody plays their drum really, really quietly. And then when they stand up, they're essentially leading the volume, the dynamic of the music.
Okay.
So a lot of that kind of imagery and as well as shared leadership, conductor, kind of playing conductor.
Cool. So when we talk about, and this is really, I love this, because we talk about imagination and play, and I think it's something that most of us forget in our daily lives, in how we engage in our work lives and how we engage in our personal life. So how we're seeing an understanding through some of the stories that imagination and play are very important. So when you're creating that theme, so example, the flower, is there a spontaneous rhythm that's being created, or is that led as well?
It depends on my instruction. Sometimes it can be just a drum roll, which may represent the rain coming down. Mm-hmm. So just kind of a pitter-patter on the drum, which is kind of not rhythm, it's just kind of noise, but a drum roll, a rumble. And then as the flower grows bigger, we get louder.
Right.
And as it goes down, we get softer. But then there's also the relationship between the rhythm and the dance and the movement. So it can be rhythmic as well. So the flower in the middle may be a dancing flower or a walking flower. And then as the drummers, we follow that flower's footsteps. So it becomes dun, 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 dun. So the movement
mimics,
we mimic and imitate.
Okay.
Does that answer your question?
Yes, I think so. I don't know. I'm just learning a lot, so I'm having a great time. So now we talk about this because in your group courses, you have things that are set out. You have a set teaching plan, sort of, kind of, or you go more intuitive in that approach as well with the group.
Yeah, it's pretty intuitive. Although I always have a plan. I have pretty much a protocol, a structure that I follow that I developed, you know, which is again influenced from expressive arts therapy training and then figuring out what works and what doesn't work. And there's definitely a lot of strategy in the way that I work. And then again, throw the lesson plan out the window and it's about the group. Where are they at? So maybe when I was first starting out, if I was going in to run a workshop with a group of adults with disabilities, I may have had my plan all, we're going to start with this and then do this and then do this. And now I throw the plan out the window and I go in with my basic structure and work with them.
Allow it to flow from there.
Yeah.
So is that different from an individual expressive art therapy session?
Expressive arts therapy session, yeah, that's quite different. I think the groups that I run, I wouldn't consider expressive arts therapy, right? It's more therapeutic and skill building, although expressive arts therapy can be skill building. In expressive arts therapy, it's also the agenda's out the window. You know, we're trained in how to how to work with somebody individually through the arts, and it's really the raw material that they bring, seeing them as the expert and running with it as in a therapy session.
Okay, that's interesting. I'm just wondering the difference between the two, because we're talking about things that are different with your drumming and the education that you provide for drumming, and then expressive arts therapy. But then there's also the crossover between the two. So
very much. I haven't dipped in so much to offer a practice in expressive arts therapy. What I do offer is private drum classes, which so people will come if they want something a little more just intimate and customized specifically to them.
Right.
They'll come and we'll have a 1-hour drumming class.
Okay.
And then inevitably it ties into everything they're experiencing in their own life, whether we go there or not. And we could easily go there, but you know.
Right. So it comes up naturally. And the drum helps to facilitate that release or that opening for them to get into themselves.
Usually the way that somebody, a client, will drum and approach drumming is usually the way that they're experiencing their life. So example, or challenge in their life or overcoming an obstacle. So if somebody is like completely in their head, the drum is not the only place they're completely in their head and stuck. They're, you know, the drum, learning the drum and to become more into the present moment and have confidence playing the drum is going to ripple out into every day-to-day activity that or in relationship that they have.
What I think of when I listen to you is I think of Jennifer Drummond, and I don't know if you know Jennifer, but she
The
belly dancing psychotherapist. Which belly dance? She, you know, she has found her niche and has a way of, you know, bringing it together in a way that's, you know, very unique and very different. And, you know, it's through that belly dancing that she assists women to really express and go through, you know, the issues that they're going through. So I would imagine that the drumming or that you do dance and you do everything, that it facilitates the same type of session. But what, like, how do you initially start with drumming?
Depends on, for example, if it's in a group, it's actually usually some kind of check-in, some kind of way of attuning with everybody so that everybody can have a chance to express kind of where they're at, how they are, how's your day been, how are you feeling in this moment, through a percussion instrument. So that's very typical to any kind of you know, group that's doing a little bit deeper work, maybe as opposed to let's just drum. It's, you know, expressing yourself through an instrument in a way that'll just let the rest of the day go and allow them to be there in the moment and hear tangibly how their frustration or what that may sound like.
Right.
And then it's said and it's heard and then it moves. And it's also mirrored by the whole group. So there's lots of different structures to do a check-in, but that's typically how I start with a group of adults, whether it's a cancer support group or women with eating disorders or adults who come to learn drum skills in my intermediate drum class. It's a great way of just checking in, connecting as a group, and then moving on. And so what happens after that typically may be some kind of warming up, whether it's through body percussion to warm us up into the rhythms that we can express through clapping, through stomping, connecting together as a group and communicating that way. And then we move on to the drumming and review, basic always. We review the basics, where we hold the drum, basic review, can always learn the basics. So, And then we move on to learning skills and rhythms. And then there's a whole tons of different rhythm-based cooperative games and activities. And then just the plain old beauty of learning the ensemble rhythms and working together and coming together in different parts and forming a whole.
Oh.
Yeah.
Because everything, and that's, because no matter if everybody is doing the same rhythm or their own rhythm, when it comes to that, you have this complete sound, this complete community that you talked about before in that community drum circle or any group that gets together.
Yeah, it's really empowering.
That's absolutely brilliant. So what do you have coming up on your schedule?
Oh, coming up, I've got lots of things in spring. It's an exciting time. In the spirit of going back to the way that I first got introduced to the drum, through the community drum circle, I still offer a once a month community drum circle for all ages, all levels of drumming experience. And that's typically the last Sunday of the month. So I've got three more in spring in March, April, and May. And should I say what it is? All right.
Yeah,
so
sure.
The next one's coming up this Sunday, March 28th, from 2 to 4. And they're all held at the United Steelworkers Hall, where so much drumming happens these days. It's so awesome. The walls are just soaking up all the vibrations, and I get so excited to go back there. So it's 25 Cecil Street near Kensington Market. Great location. It's central. So Sunday, March 28th from 2 to 4. And at each community drum circle, I feature a different performing artist. So we have a 15-minute performance with Café Compan, which is a duo originally from Mexico, and they play specific percussive melodic type of music called Son Jarocho from Veracruz, Mexico. So they're going to delight us with some other types of instruments, and it's really nice to get the different type of instruments besides the drums in there, and also expose them to more people. And so that's kind of the way I work those. And also at the community drum circles, we have my colleagues and friends, Shaw Percussion, who come and they sell their djembes and world percussion instruments, and they are a great resource. So if somebody has a drum that needs tuned, they can bring it to the circle, and Phil will have a look at it, take the drum to the doctor, and get a little tune-up. So it's just a great big community event, averaging about 40 to 50 people each month, and it's just growing. Last month we had a community drum circle for Haiti, and just kind of, you know, it's a great platform to bring in those kinds of
It motivates social change as well.
Yeah.
You have this opportunity in, you know, we talk about the drum circle and how that creates a community. And then you're creating your own community by bringing in these different performers to infuse and to create a deeper experience for the people who are coming to participate. Phenomenal.
Thank you. Yeah. So 28th and then Sunday, April 25th, featuring Mutamba and Pasi. And they are from Zimbabwe and they play beautiful mbira. And then Sunday, May 30th, Mbira is, it's like, it may also be known as a thumb piano.
Okay.
It's like one of those little simpler, but they play it in a gourd, which amplifies the sound, and it's beautiful, and they storytelling and songs and from Zimbabwe. And then the Sunday, May 30th is drum and dance performance with students of my students and the students of a fellow of a dancer, Alicia McMillan. So a good lineup for March, April, May.
Excellent. So that's this Sunday coming up.
Yes.
And then the last Sunday of each month.
Yes. 2 to 4.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. At Cecil Street.
Cecil Street.
Okay. 25 Cecil Street.
Right. Another program I'm really excited about is a facilitator training program. called Drumming as a Therapeutic Activity for anybody who facilitates groups and wants to just learn a little more how to integrate rhythm-based activities through drumming, percussion, voice, and movement into the groups they work with. So it's a 4-week program. Mm-hmm.
Go ahead. Can you tell us a little bit about what goes on in those four
weeks? Yeah, it's really fun. It's completely experiential, so you don't have to have any previous drumming experience. So people come and it's a 2-hour class, 7:30 to 9:30, and I introduce kind of Rhythmic by Nature, my approach and philosophy, and offering some insight into what are the therapeutic benefits of drumming, some, you know, core research that's been done, and then experiencing it firsthand. And through I find experiencing the activities and the whole range of things we can do with the drum and the percussion instruments, people will just soak it up by osmosis, but then we'll also look at how to facilitate, and we'll get some hands-on practice in a safe environment. People will practice on each other, and it's a blast.
All right. So that's 4 weeks.
4 weeks, starting May 3rd, 10th, 17th, and 31st. And with the cost comes 10 small shakers for them to kind of start off their own little drumming percussion kit.
Percussion kit.
Nice.
Okay, cool.
So it's good for educators, therapists, healthcare practitioners, any group facilitators or trainers, anyone looking for new ways of how to connect with others in a meaningful, fun way through music.
Mm-hmm. And vibration and sound.
Yeah.
So that's 4 weeks, 2 hours each night, is that right?
Yes.
4 weeks, and that starts in May.
Yeah. Monday nights.
And so that facilitator, which is what you do. So can you maybe give me a little bit more? Because I'm interested.
Want to take the course?
Yeah. So when you say facilitate, what other things do you bring into this? So you're talking about learning how to facilitate. Maybe expand on what you mean by learning how to facilitate in a group, just so that people can understand what that might entail.
Well, it could be, for example, somebody who already has their own, say, women's group that wants to spice it up a little bit more and offer a different way, a complementary way of expression that just, and if they come to this program, they're going to learn how to lead and how to integrate a percussive experience, a drumming experience into their group.
Brilliant.
Then there's the other side of things where somebody may say, oh, I want to lead, like, I want to do this. I want to learn how to facilitate and go out and take this out into the world and start my own. And there's really a whole art to facilitating. And this training program draws on all of my previous training, which is not only expressive arts therapy, but there is actually a school of drum circle facilitation, which was started by Arthur Hall in the States.
Okay.
And he's kind of the grandfather of drum circle culture in North America, which is different from traditional West African drumming. There's a distinction there.
Right.
So the drum circle facilitation is a whole nother thing, really.
Okay. Yep.
But I draw on everything I've learned from his approach as well and formed my own Rhythmic by Nature approach that people can embrace into their own work.
I think that's, I think it's a lovely name because you have this Rhythmic by Nature. How more direct and to the point can you be? It's like, yeah. That's brilliant. So
Thank you. We have
the courses, the sessions,
yes.
Drumming circle sessions, the end of each Sunday, the last Sunday of each month. Tongue-tied or what? And then the 4-week facilitator course as well.
Yeah, and then daytime and evening classes as well.
So
I have a daytime midday power jam designed for people who want to take a break from their workday, people who maybe have the flexibility to come and drum for an hour and 15 minutes on a Thursday from 11:45 to 1. And I offer those classes at 918 Bathurst, just Bathurst and Bloor. And then I have a once a month, just all level drumming program. And I've got one coming up tomorrow night from 7:30 to 9:30. That's for anybody. It's a workshop, basics, people who want to learn basics and beyond. So yeah, daytime,
evening,
you're
available
weekend.
All the time, Terry.
Well, we hope not all the
time.
No, exactly.
So those are what I consider the core Rhythmic by Nature programs that I offer to the community. And then, of course, I get calls to go into organizations and companies and social service agencies and schools and summer camps, and I do all that.
Mm-hmm. 'Cause you perform as well.
And so, yeah, we, so I do performances group, you as well.
Perform, yeah.
Yeah, what you saw there was my intermediate drum students. It was part of a study and outreach program. So we met weekly for 10 weeks, and within that, we went out to different community events, and Buddha Groove was one of those events. So that was a hopefully something we're going to get going again in the summer to have my students out showcasing and offering interactive drumming performances. And then I also get hired to go, you know, perform at weddings. And in those cases, I will have different drummer and musicians that I collaborate with.
Mm-hmm.
And lots of fun.
Very good.
So that would be a very different wedding.
Yeah.
I would imagine.
Yeah.
Much more spiritual and nature related versus the traditional... Hire a DJ.
Yes,
yeah.
And, yeah. White wedding, you know, Billy Idol kind of music DJ.
Yeah. Yeah. We had drums at my wedding. It was so much fun. Yeah.
That's brilliant.
Yeah. It was, I cried. Yeah. It was really nice.
Okay, yeah. You're supposed to have drums at your wedding because that's what you do.
Exactly.
And that's
who you are.
and now, Rhythmic by Nature. So that's where we get a hold of you.
Yes.
So, rhythmicbynature.com. And even if you Google it, it'll be right there.
Rhythmicbynature.com. And I have a blog that I update regularly, so check it out. Lots of drumming tips and articles and information.
On drums? Nice. Just drumming in particular?
Yeah.
Or do you have a lot of different things as well?
I basically blog on my experiences drumming with different populations and offer, I have a monthly newsletter that I send out with drum tips and a moment of resonance, something that has stuck with me for the month that may be something like the woman who could only nod her head that I write about and then post on my blog, and always encouraging people to share their testimonials of how rhythm and rhythmic expression has influenced their lives.
Nice.
Awesome. Mm-hmm. I think that's brilliant. Mm-hmm. Absolutely brilliant. So can we recap? Do we have time to recap?
We do.
Okay, so we've got daytime and evening, Terry.
Yes, daytime and evening.
Private sessions for group sessions. We have Terry the performer. We have Terry the expressive arts therapist. We have Terry the drum facilitator. And the course is coming up in May, 4 weeks in May. And then we have the drum circle that's happening the last Sunday of each month, March, April, and May. Did I miss anything?
I also sell drum and percussion instruments and customized packages for schools and offer training programs to organizations who want to start their own Rhythmic by Nature drumming program in their school and provide the training and the drum packages. And I've got those programs happening right now at two or three different organizations, and it's really exciting.
Awesome. Wow. You're just... you got flowers sparkling up all over the place.
You.
They're not just walking flowers or dancing flowers. They're sprouting, running flowers. They're going everywhere. Self-seeding.
You.
Well done.
Yeah. Yeah, it's growing, that's for sure.
Well, that's brilliant, Terry. Yeah. Awesome.
Thank you.
Very good. Mm-hmm. And again, it was Terry Segal, and that's rhythmicbynature.com.
Yes.
Get a hold of her. Read the blog. Find out what music and sound and drumming can do for you.
Woo-hoo.
Awesome.
And you know also who your guest is going to be next month.
I do.
Which is like a new thing.
Yeah, exactly. Yes, I do. It's Stelio. I'm not going to pronounce his last name because I'm afraid I'll massacre it.
Okay.
But Stelio from Modern Movement Dance Studio here in Toronto, who's been, and I actually remember taking Stelio's class in 1984.
Mm-hmm.
And I went back to dance class. It's just been a year and a half. And that's where I ended up, was right here. So everything that goes around comes around and brings you back full circle. And hopefully it's a drumming circle.
Ba-da-ba-boom.
Yeah. All right. Well, this has been a great show.
Yeah. Thank you. It's fun.
Enjoyable.
Awesome.
All right. We will be back next month. Do you remember what the date is? Well, it's the last
Thursday of April, but I think there's two last Thursdays in April, I think, because it's 5 weeks.
Oh, okay.
Oh boy.
Okay, so we'll let you know when that is.
Stay tuned.
Stay tuned.
You're lucky I actually knew who I'm having next month.
Mm-hmm. All right.
I'm lucky. I know what I'm doing.
Have a great day.